Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are chatting with Craig Hemke, founder and editor of tfmetalsreport.com. Now, Craig, we are going to discuss the resource, especially the precious metals sector, but first I do want to start with the US dollar, because the US dollar has rebounded quite nicely from, let's say, June onward. In June, it was slightly below 90 on the dollar index and now has climbed back to a little above 94. It's come off a little bit from its highs at 94.52 on that dollar index. But again, still, the trend is higher and this naturally does pressure some commodities. And we have seen a general slowdown in even the base metals, a lot of commodities outside of energy and uranium. But Craig, what do you think in terms of driving the dollar here? What are the key factors that are helping this dollar move higher? And is there higher levels ahead for the dollar?
Yeah, you know, Corey, this is one of the things I lament all the time is in reference to the dollar, you know, as everybody says, dollar's going higher and dollar's getting weaker. We're always talking about the dollar index. And the dollar index just simply compares the dollar versus all the other unhinged, unbacked fiat in the world. So if they all devalue at the same rate, if they're all printed basically at the same rate by their central banks, then relative to each other, they don't change. But there are periods when I go back to 13 and 14, when we were in the midst of QE3, which was $1 trillion of QE, but yet the dollar soared from 80 to 100, the dollar index. And that was because the Fed, you know, was tapering their QE and letting that run off while the ECB and everybody else kept on going. And so all of a sudden, relative to those others, the dollar looks better and the dollar index moves up 25% over the course of a year. And that was a very deflationary period. All of the commodities got crushed. We called it the great disinflation bias back then. Even crude oil, which now is back to levels not seen since 2014. Well, yeah, because in 2014, it was falling from 90 down to 40. So now crude oil has finally come all the way back around. But yeah, that is always going to be a headwind if the dollar's moving up. And yeah, since June, silver's down from 28 to 22 while the dollar's moved. And, you know, I'd invite anybody to do this. If you want to track the dollar, there's a real easy thing that anybody can do. If you can pull up a daily chart of the dollar. This move began on Wednesday, June the 16th, with the June FOMC, where, you know, the dot plot changed. But more importantly, the Fed started paying 5 basis points on excess reserves. The dollar took off on a rally, a three-day rally. And if you start on June the 16th, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, got big green candles. Just draw yourself a couple of parallel lines off of the lows of Wednesday and the high on Friday. And you'll see the dollar has been in a channel for almost 4 months ever since. There are about 8 or 9 days where the dollar trades above that channel. If you use a candlestick chart, it leaves kind of a candlestick, a little candle wick hanging out the top, but never closes out of that channel. And it's come down a couple times and bounced on the bottom end of the channel if you make the lines parallel. So it's in a pretty clearly defined upward range. And until it either, you know, breaks out and really soars to the upside, which of course is always going to be a risk given the taper discussion, or breaks down, then you got to be aware that that's kind of a headwind for the precious metals and commodities in general.
Well, Craig, as it relates to the dollar, it seems like a strange environment to me where you've got stickier inflation and Fed goons, as you call them, and even yep. Powell mentioning that it's frustrating to them that inflation is stickier. And generally, when we're seeing higher wages, higher commodity prices, higher input costs with energy, all of those things leading to an inflationary situation, it seems strange that the dollar is strengthening into this. Could some of that be traders in the general markets pulling profits from a pretty good year in the markets? Could it be that people are nervous of this taper or potential taper tantrum in the markets, and so they're going to cash and going to the dollar as a safe haven? What do you think's driving this dollar higher in the face of what everywhere else would, because that seems more deflationary for a higher dollar when everything else is leading to higher inflation? What do you make of that?
Yeah, you would think, when you think logically, Chad, you're not supposed to do that, right? You're supposed to just let the pre-programmed machines take their trading cues and do their thing. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It's like, oh, the dollar rallied today because interest rates moved up. And that means, okay, people are buying the dollar because U.S. interest rates are going up. However, if you take that to its natural end and you think, okay, I'm buying dollars to then use it to buy bonds because interest rates are higher. But if you're supplying a bid for the bond market, that means bond price is going to go up and yields go back down. Okay, so none of that really makes sense. And on the inflation front, your dollar is becoming more worthless faster because of how great inflation is going. But that supposedly makes you want to buy dollars. But again, that argument is, well, no, the inflation means higher interest rates. Again, none of this in any logical sense, you know, in a market that was run by human beings 20 or 30 or 40 years ago would make any sense at all. But in today's world, where everything's just been destroyed by the central banks, it's somehow those pieces fit together. And that's what's driving it. This notion that in higher inflation means higher interest rates, which means, that means maybe the Fed's going to taper. All of those things mean that that makes the dollar look stronger versus the euro, which can't ever be tapered because they don't have any other choice but to keep printing euros to buy European debt. And again, the risk is that we've seen this before 7-8 years ago. And who am I to say it's not going to be as bad as it was then, because I didn't think it would be that bad 8 years ago. But yet now here we are kind of into that process again. What it's going to take to reverse this probably is an acknowledgement once the Fed gets going that they can't taper, you know, or that they're not going to run this predictable schedule, you know, running off $15 billion a month for 8 or 9 months until they go down to nothing by July of next year. I mean, there's going to have to be another, and maybe by then, sentiment will have shifted again, you know, to anticipate the next round of QE, you know, and things will get better. It's just such a crazy world that we live in. And again, not even anything like it was even 15 years ago. But these things somehow make sense to people that have control more assets than the three of us. And so these systems are, you know, perpetuate regardless of how illogical that may seem.
Well, it's just the way these markets are moving, though, right? And as you keep alluding to, back to central banks and the Fed is a key consideration, right? And the Fed, all expectations are, will be tapering. Who knows how long or how progressive they will be in their tapering and potentially even raising rates. So that does naturally put some sort of a buy, you'd think, into the dollar. And also the U.S. economy still going relatively well in terms of the recovery. And I know that's also on shaky ground, or you can make that argument. But these two factors, it could draw investors in. And well, the other fact is, where else are they going to put their money, right? That is something that needs to be considered. What is the answer to that? Well, where else should investors, in your eyes, be putting their money then?
Well, you know, it's all part of a diversified portfolio, Corey, right? I mean, you'd be crazy not to have some money in the general equity markets. And I'm sure that's part of the dollar strength, right? I mean, the U.S. stock market just keeps going up. It's now back above its 100-day moving average. It looks like it's got its eyes on its 50-day, and we'll just keep the trend on going, even though it looked like as recently as a couple of days ago, maybe it was breaking down. And so maybe people are buying dollars to buy U.S. stocks as well. And I know there are people like my friend Brent Johnson that think the dollar is inherently strong because so much of the, you know, they're what, 60% of global currency reserves and trade and everything else is in the U.S. dollar. So there's always this demand, especially from emerging market countries, that they have to have dollars. And so all those things kind of factor together to keep a bid for the dollar all the time. And again, that's probably not changing. So, you know, as part of a portfolio, you want to recognize that as we try to inflate the debt away and run negative real interest rates, the stock market's probably going to keep going up. Maybe, again, dollar relative to all these other currencies, maybe that's a good currency to keep your holdings in for a significant part of your holdings. But at the end of the day, none of this, all this it does is accentuate the stuff we've always talked about. I mean, the madness is moving toward its eventual end. You just don't know what level of debt it finally breaks everything down because you can't service it. You can't print it fast enough to service it. And I don't know what that point will be, but I know that point is eventually coming. And that's why I own physical gold and silver. And I know, you know, you talk about the mining stocks. If eventually the metals take off, and I will point out that one of the things from earlier this week, the Bloomberg Spot Commodity Index made new all-time highs, higher than 2008 and higher than 2011. So eventually that trickles over. All this stuff leads to new highs in both the metals, and the shares are going to take off. But again, just like anything else, you know, you'd be kind of crazy to stick everything you've got in the metals or the mining shares and just wait for, you know, eventually to be right. You've got to pay attention to everything else that's going on in the world. And so there's room for allocating your assets in other sectors too, no doubt.
So quick comment on that CRB continuing to move higher. You are right. It has even just recently broken even higher. However, it seems to be supported by energy mostly. And look, also the base metals are hanging up at generally higher levels. Doesn't this speak to a better economic recovery, which in essence isn't the fear that's needed to bring people into the precious metals?
Maybe. I think it's a bigger picture than that. You know, it's like one of the things that, and I don't understand it fully to make it sound like I'm an expert, but they talk about this credit impulse out of China and how aggressively they're working to, inflate their problems away and acquiring natural resources, you know, and keep their economy moving forward. And that credit impulse actually went negative earlier this year, which kind of foreshadowed some of the trouble that we've had, you know, as you look back now in precious metals, but in all commodities. But now with the Evergrande thing, that credit impulse is positive again. And they're going to end up going pedal to the metal, whether that involves a yuan devaluation or, you know, that, I guess that would be like an extreme case. But they're going to go pedal to the metal to try to keep things liquid there and try to paper over, no pun intended, some of the credit issues that they have. And so that kind of, you know, that goes out into the commodity land. I mean, the word the Chinese government allegedly put out to all their power companies was to acquire as much of the hard assets you can get your hands on, you know, whether that's uranium or coal or the steel needed to build new plants or anything like that. So there's this underlying, you know, regardless of, you know, is crude oil going up because the economies of the world are recovering, or is crude oil going up because of its own supply demand picture? What's with natural gas? You know, you can break it down and look at all these different things and, you know, make a case for why it might come back down or go up. But I think as a whole, as a sector, the fundamental picture is still very positive. And I think that's what that Bloomberg index is telling you. I mean, that, you know, the notion that we're in the early stages still of a bull market in commodities, you know, that usually runs 10 years or so. I think that kind of reinforces it.
Yeah, Craig, you bring up a great point there, because you could look at any individual commodity on its own fundamentals. So, for example, with energy, you know, what's the supply demand? With agricultural products and food, some of that's weather dependent. Weather also affects natural gas if it's a cold winter. But when you look at the overall commodity basket generally running higher, and again, it paired with wages running higher, we are still seeing sticky inflation, and it's beyond now just saying it's a supply chain issue. There really is stickier inflation, and all the central banks have admitted that. So at what point do the general investors or your average Joe and Joanna on the street, when do they finally realize that it's not really the dollar index doesn't matter how it's weighted against other currencies? It's your purchasing power. What you can actually buy with dollars is getting less and less because your purchasing power is being eroded by inflation. So at what point would they realize the dollar index isn't nearly as relevant as what you can buy with your dollars when you go to a store? And could that eventually drive some thought into gold and silver and maybe even the cryptos?
Yeah, Shad, that's a big part of the equation, right? That would require a lot of education. That would require a lot of, you know, people that are financial planners and CFPs and stockbrokers and the like to actually work with their clients to educate them on that kind of thing. And I'm not even sure those advisors and, you know, licensed financial people are hip on all that. And so I think instead what almost has to be happening is they have to be dragged to it. In a period like the 70s into the early 80s, where paper assets are underperforming consistently versus harder assets. And after a few quarters or a couple of years of that, then, you know, you kind of come from the top down a recognition where the markets are telling you you're missing out here. And then the advisor starts talking to the people and trying to educate them why they're missing out and how they're missing out. And then that's, and then they come and meet you from the bottom up. But it may be more of a rather, because no, who wants to change or get educated? If you're making money, you're like, yeah, what do I need that for? I'm doing great. It's when you start getting, you know, then the world has actually shifted on you. And then, you know, and that becomes apparent that maybe then you seek out this education, understand what's going on. I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's my answer.
Sounds like a lot of moving parts there, Craig. And look, you are right. If they're making money in other sectors, then why are they going to look to other sectors? Because they're already making money, so they feel smart. It takes a bit more of a wake-up call to change the overall perception, overall portfolio allocation. Craig, great chatting with you as always, buddy. I hope you have a great rest of your week, a great weekend. We'll chat again next week. And hey, Craig, always great chatting with you.
Thanks, boys. Hang in there.